I am Madison Timmons.
I'm Chris Soucy.
And we're paranormal specialists who live in the most haunted city on Earth, Savannah, Georgia. Every day is Halloween in our line of work, so join us as we spin true tales of haunts, murders, and disturbing Savannah history. I'm Madison.
I'm Chris.
And welcome to the most haunted city on Earth.
Boom.
Hey, y'all, before we get into this episode, we do have exciting news. Our podcast has been nominated as Best Local Podcast here in Savannah by Connect Savannah. Every year, they have their Best Of competition. It's a very acclaimed competition here in Savannah. And so it's a really big honor to be nominated for it. We really do need your help voting, though. You can vote every single day, and we have a link in our description for it. So it is under Best Local Podcast for the Most Haunted City on Earth. But while you are there, we are nominated for some other various ventures. So Savannah Underground is nominated for Best Local Theater Production. And Chris's improv troupe, Oddlot, is nominated for Best Local Comedy Troupe. And then JT was nominated for Best Local Theater Director, and that is under John Taylor Timmons, if you didn't know his full name by now. So, but we do really appreciate you guys voting, and it is a big deal if you win this competition. So let's be the first ghost podcast to win that category.
Come on.
Rolling. We kind of sound like those seagulls from Finding Nemo. Mine. Rolling.
Y'all just like doing fun things into the microphone.
Mine?
You really should be utilizing this information that we give. At the,
that's true.
Yeah.
Because I was saying mine over and over again.
Mine. Okay.
we'll make t-shirts out of it.
Right.
All right.
Here we go.
It's
so,
just ghosts instead of the seagulls.
Go for it.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of The Most Haunted City on Earth. My name is Madison Timmons.
I'm Chris Soucy.
And I'm JT Timmons.
And today we are going to be talking about everybody's favorite topic, doppelgangers.
Doppelgangers.
The internet just goes wild over doppelgangers.
Yeah, we decided to do this episode when we had two TikToks do stupendously well. And I think they're the only two TikToks we've ever done on doppelgangers. So I feel like
we mentioned doppelgangers and boom.
Yes.
So it's an experiment, really, is what we're doing. Yeah. We're conducting a little experiment.
It is.
How Jordan. Much do you love doppelgangers?
If I see the views, like, you know, because I religiously check the analytics like multiple times a day. And so if I see like the views just skyrocket, we're starting a doppelganger show. Absolutely. We're going to have Doppelganger December.
Doppelganger December.
I love it.
Uh-huh. Jordan Peele would be very proud of us.
Yeah.
Before we get into that, though, if you are watching this on YouTube, please make sure to like and subscribe. It definitely helps us out a lot. Do all the comments, the sharing, all those jazzy things.
Yeah, right, the stuff that makes the things go.
Yes, exactly.
YouTube sees you hit the like button and then it goes, oh, they like it. More people will like it.
Oh, yeah.
Those tricky algorithms.
Nice.
But if you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or all those things, definitely consider giving us a rating, you know, a 5-star rating.
Yes.
Definitely help us out as well.
Absolutely.
So,
and you can just like it, like in your heart.
Yeah.
You know.
No.
If you
analytics.
If you feel compelled.
It's, algorithm. Must feed the algorithm.
But now that we've done all that business, we can go ahead and start talking about doppelgangers. So we've sent the internet on a quest to find
mirror lore.
That TikTok got 2.2 million views, and nobody has been able to find the book.
And what's fascinating is, you know, when you think about old books, finding old books is a bit of a treasure hunt, but the more I think about it, the more I'm like, this might have been a small press book.
Right.
It was in the library on the base in Vicenza, Italy.
Yeah.
And Lord only knows where it could have been, a one off from some weird magazine that's like, yeah, let's just print out these books. Because I kept for a long time, I thought it was a Time Life book. Time Life did a series on supernatural books, and I was certain that it was a Time Life, you know, in the shadows book or something like that. It is not. It is not one of the Time Life books, because it was that same thin, like,
Right.
You know.
Like periodical.
Almost
sorts.
Like it was a part of a set, maybe. Mm-hmm. But I never saw any of the other parts of the set, which is, of course, why I thought it was a Time Life book.
I see.
So even more so, it might be a part of a set. It might not be an individual standalone book.
So if you live on that military base or know somebody who works on that military base.
Go to that library, which I'm sure is still there.
Right. Well, you know.
I can't promise you anything. Well, I once went to my childhood base in Germany. It is gone. That entire base and all the buildings are gone. Like the building I lived in is gone.
Okay.
Well, I mean, it could still be
there. It could still be there.
And knowing government entities, they are going to rotate these books out. So it is very possible that that book is still sitting on a shelf somewhere at that military base, if it's still there.
And so for people just like chiming in, what is the book?
Oh, so the book is called Mirror Lore. And I want to say it had like a subtitle of The Folklore About Mirrors. And it talked about all the different things that people do with mirrors, covering them during funerals and stuff like that. And each chapter was dedicated to a curious practice around mirrors. People used to think that they could divine the future from mirrors. I think they were saying that the oracle at Delphi was actually a mirror. And mirrors at that time, I think, were like silver bowls that they filled with water. Mm-hmm. And then they would look into the water.
Like Harry Potter.
I guess. Yeah. I mean, and again, this book did that, but at the end, the last chapter was on doppelgangers. And it kind of detailed that Bloody Mary was a doppelganger story.
Oh.
And the one thing that always stuck out from that book was that doppelgangers watch us from mirrors. That's how they get close to us. Is if you're looking in the mirror, the reflection might not be a reflection. It might be your doppelganger stalking you.
I have to know where this book is.
Yeah, right? It's crazy. Right.
Okay, here's what we're going to do. I'm gonna cut this up, this whole snippet, into a TikTok, including what I'm talking about right now. And we're just going to put in big letters, can you find this book?
Right.
And we're going to have not just you know, a small group. We're going to have all of TikTok finding this book. We're going to find this book.
People have been commenting because I put that in the caption. I was like, find Mirror Lore. And people are commenting back like days after they watched the TikTok, like, did anybody find the book?
You know? Anybody find the book? Find this book. Yeah, it's very strange. You know, I'm beginning to worry that it's like a Mandela effect situation.
Oh, no.
Because I've never, ever seen it again. I've never seen any reference to it. I've never seen anything like it. But again, it would be like trying to find a weird children's book that you found when you were a kid, because it was kind of like a children's book in my mind. You know, big print, big, you know, pictures, lots of pictures.
Lots of pictures. You
know. All right. So, Chris, close your eyes.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking.
And reflect.
Okay. No pun intended.
Here I am.
are there any details that you can give TikTok about this book?
I've given all of it.
Everything you've already
said. It looked like a Time Life book, and if you're familiar, because like I think Time Life did a Wild West series, and they did a Supernatural series, and I was so certain that it was one of those Supernatural books, but it wasn't. I've been through every one of the Time Life books. It's not there. The cover was a picture, an optical illusion of a woman looking into a mirror, and she's like combing her hair. She had black hair and the whole picture looks like a skull, but if you look at it closer, it's obviously a woman looking into a mirror.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a famous optical illusion.
Oh, cool.
So
okay.
That should give you reference.
It should help.
And
I don't even think in my youth I never like looked who wrote this.
Who wrote
I would
this?
Like to see who wrote this. Who was the publisher? What was the publishing date? I never even looked at any of those things when I was a kid.
No, kids don't.
Yeah, it didn't occur to me.
Be like a prodigy. He's like
or, fun, spooky yeah. book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Chris, what is something that you know about doppelgangers that you haven't yet shared on this podcast?
It's German for double goer.
Ooh. Okay.
That's the actual doppelganger is German for double goer. And in tradition, a doppelganger is a spirit that looks like you. that it can look like you. And it has actually grown into a kind of a phenomena where the belief is that there are living people on the planet who look like you, who just happen to live their lives looking a lot like you, non-related people who look a lot like you. And in German lore, to see your doppelganger is a harbinger of your own death. So it's very similar to the Banshee in that regard. There's a lot of ghosts that when they appear, it kind of signifies that you are going to die. So it's a bad thing to see your doppelganger.
Yeah. Wow.
But and it pervades. It's a part of so many literary devices. There's a lot of shows, movies that have worked on the principle of someone trying to take your life, and that becomes the driving force of a doppelganger. The doppelganger is replicating who you are. They have all your memories. They have all of your, you know, they have the intent to become you, to live out your life. And so one of the things that I always found interesting was, and people don't really talk about this all that often, is that the doppelganger's goal is to kill you and take over your life. And that is why some people say there's marked changes in people overnight. You know, all of a sudden this charitable person's very stingy, and all of a sudden this mean person is very kind. They're thinking that, oh, it's the doppelganger. The doppelganger got to him and now is living out his life.
Kind of like a weird, twisted form of reincarnation.
Basically. Kinda. Yeah, kinda.
Huh.
Yeah.
It's honestly, if y'all remember that thought or theory that Avril Lavigne was, you know, like something happened to Avril Lavigne where like her doppelganger came through.
Interesting.
Yeah, because they were basically saying like there was like this whole conspiracy theory where she like looked slightly different and she went away for a long period of time and then she came back and, you know, her voice sounded a little bit different and things like that. And I'm like, that could just be maturity, but you know.
Well, and we're fascinated by the concept. We're fascinated, for the longest time, the Paul McCartney.
Oh, yeah.
Billy Shears, the idea that Paul McCartney died in a car wreck and they replaced him with somebody who looked like him. Hmm. And it was that whole, you know, endless fascination in the idea that you could replace somebody.
Yeah, I remember that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you could. I mean, the people have been blaming the government, like conspiracy theorists or just people really interested in conspiracy think that, you know, the government has been switching people out, which is not necessarily like that's not otherworldly thought. I mean,
it's fascinating because there had been a lot, you know, like if you go deep diving into those conspiracies, there's a belief that, when you enter into like high level spy stuff, there might be a program, a facial recognition program, trying to find somebody that if they had to fake your death, they'd use that body.
That's
which
dope.
Is a great plot for a screenplay, by the way.
Yeah, I know, right?
Is the government find somebody who looks like the person, and that even brings to like the literary devices of The Prince and the Pauper, which was, you know, this famous tale of a lowly person who just happened to look exactly like the prince, and they switched them during a time of upheaval just so that, you know, the prince could experience, you know, life as a commoner, and this pauper becomes, you know, the prince for a while. And even the Man in the Iron Mask, Alexandre Dumas, wrote a story about the reason why the man is in the Iron Mask is because he is the twin of the actual king. And so they put the mask on his face so no one's like, oh, why is the king in the jail?
Uh-huh.
There's lots of stories like that. I even want to say Dostoevsky wrote, and I want to say it's probably just a straight-up doppelganger story called The Double, in which a man encounters a man who looks just like him, and then, of course, it spells his ultimate doom because Dostoevsky was not a cheery writer. The fact that the stories are constantly coming up and people are constantly telling them, and that's, you know, we were talking about Jordan Peele's Us, is a play on the doppelganger's notion, because in the fullness of the doppelganger lore, everybody has a doppelganger.
Mm-hmm.
Every human being has this doppelganger, this spirit that follows us around and is basically absorbing all of the events of our lives and formulating a way to appear like us to,
sure,
you know, and it's kind of a fascinating lore when it comes down to it, to think that there's this spirit that looks like us and acts like us. And the question was, you know, one of them was, they have mirror tendencies. Like, if you're right-handed, it's left-handed. If you're, you know.
Sure, sure. That's so, okay. Yeah. All right. So here's my question. I've had multiple times where people have been like, I saw someone, or were you here? Because I saw someone who looked just like you at this place. Should I would normally be, like, interested, where I'm like, maybe I should go, like, see who they're talking about or show me a photo. But should I not do that? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
This is one of the most bizarre things, because I get this every now and then, too, which is weird, because I'm a 6'4" Asian that's, like, 3 feet wide. to have somebody be like, you look just like so-and-so. I was at a Blockbuster. This is showing my age. I was at a Blockbuster looking for movies, and this group, it was like three or four people came up to me, and first they started talking to me very familiarly and calling me Mike, and I'm like, I'm not Mike. They made me show them my driver's license to prove that I wasn't this guy, and then they said, you gotta come with us to his house. No. And I was like, no thank you. Like, no, it'll weird out his parents, you look just like him. I'm like, no thank you. Oh, I'm just going to grab my Evil Dead 2 and leave. You know, it was very bizarre, but they were so adamant. And then for weeks later, I would hear stories of people saying, I saw you over at so-and-so, and I waved, and you didn't even wave back. I was like, I was not there. That was not
me.
Oh,
man.
So they got to a point where I was like, I got to meet this Mike.
I know.
Because then the worst thing is you do meet somebody who everyone says you look like, and you're like, I don't look like that.
Right.
You think I look like that? I don't look like that. So, yeah, it's a double-edged sword.
You know what's a weird concept is I've never been told that I look like someone who is actually female. It's always somebody's like, you look just like my nephew. From the age of like 10 years old. Like, I remember I had
really weird,
I know, dude. Right?
You definitely look female.
But that's weird, isn't it? It's a weird concept because I'm like, it does, you know, like the concept of doppelgangers almost like follow a binary of sorts.
That's interesting too, because it's
maybe somebody else.
It does make sense that, you know, the classic thing is that there's always something that trips up a doppelganger. There's always something that they don't get right. And we talked about this with the plat eye. The plat eye is a gullah folklore creature that is attempting to look human. It's doing its best, but it always fails in some regard. And the most famous regard is it oftentimes only has one eye. Mm-hmm. Hence its name, plat eye. But the closest it'll get, and this, I always felt bad about this because this comes up in a lot of folklore, that a hare lip is a mistake from a demon or a trying to replicate humanity. Even like a hare lip was a sign of vampirism. A hare lip was a sign of, and so like the plat eye, when it gets, the closest it can get is to have just the hare lip.
Okay.
You know, it's got all the other features just right. And then it doesn't stick the landing on the lip. That is in no way disparaging towards people with hare lips. I'm just saying that is
it's just something
kind of common folklore. Sure. And you know, and that's the truth of, like, you know, I know that redheads had a hard time in history. Because whenever something's unique or different from the rest of everyone, we start to like try to come up with an answer makes them, you know, why is this person like this? Mm-hmm. You know, imagine albinos definitely did not have an easy time in history because they were so significantly different. And there were certain cultures that would like see this as a positive, you know, this is a blessed person. This is, you know, this is a person touched by, you know, some divinity. Sure. Very rarely though, mostly we suck. Mostly humans are like, beast.
So Madison, you were saying that, people say that you look like a young, because it's very interesting to me.
Yeah.
Like
what, this has happened like, to me multiple times in my life. Yeah. Like it's always random people that I meet, you know, it's like, the first time it ever happened, I was probably like 10 years old or something. And it was a substitute teacher. And she was like, she came up to me while I'm doing my work and whatnot. And she's like, I have to tell you something. I'm like, yes. So she's like, you look exactly like my nephew, like uncannily like my nephew. And she pulls out a photo out of her purse and she shows it to me. And it did look somewhat like me, a little bit in like the same facial structure. You know, yeah. I had really bright blonde hair. He had really bright blonde hair and stuff, you know.
Well, you know, it's funny.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Funny because I think that when people recognize something in you, sometimes it isn't necessarily the look. I mean, they transcribe it to the look, but it's a you remind me of,
right.
You know, the sensation of your spiritual energy, how I interact with you, the feeling I get from you, because that becomes more of what I'm used to is people like, oh, you remind me of, you know, a grizzly bear, you know. Or mostly it's like, you know, my brother and my father, you know, these ideas of the big guy who gives good hugs, a sensation rather than a look, than actual look. But we will transcribe that sensation to the look. They will force a little bit of the look because they have such a strong rapport with you. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, I feel and sense a familiarity in you.
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're just bro. You know, you're just full bro.
I'm very masculine, so, yeah. But, yeah, it's been like that. Like, still to this day, every once in a while, I'll get people who come on the trolley, and they're like, you look just like my son. And I'm like, okay.
That's like, I just can't believe someone would say that to you.
Apparently, it's just so much, like, that it compels them that they're like, I have to tell her that she looks like my son. And I'm like,
I just don't think you look and male at all.
We are zero.
I have very neutral features, so think about it, you know.
Well, when I was little, more horror stories from my sister, Jinhee, who older sisters, their point in life is to make younger siblings suffer. when I was young, I'm going to say I was maybe six or seven, Jinhee used to dress me up in all of her clothes, in a girl's dress and everything, barrette in my hair, and take me out to try to convince people that I was our cousin Christine. Oh. And everyone knew me, and they're all like, that's Chris. And Jinhee was like, no, this is Christine. And over time, we were able to fool quite a few people that I was, in fact, the cousin visiting.
Wow.
As Christine.
I love that.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
But I think that is one of those things that we innately think that there are people who are going to look like us.
Mm-hmm.
And it helped that there were all these shows that suggested that, you know, cousins could be identical, or, you know, that there are identical people in the world and that they can interchange or interswitch. And, you know, we grew up with Parent Trap you know, these stories that seem to suggest that there could be this exact duplicate. Because, like, you know, even when you see two identical twins and they're side by side, you kind of have this notion, I can tell them apart.
Yeah.
You know, just by looking at them, you know, there's enough variation. But if I saw them one at a time, it would be much harder.
Sure,
right.
Sure.
You know, when they're right next to each other, you're like, okay, all right, I've categorized it. But you encounter them one at a time, you're like, uh-oh.
No, yeah.
Is that Michael? Is that Richard? Oh, hang on. Richard has a more linear fate. No, Michael has a more linear. No, oh, his hair's this way.
What were you going to say?
Oh, I was going to say, it's interesting that it's not even just a Western thing, you know, to discuss doppelgangers. It's actually pretty universal because even in Eastern cultures, a lot of people believe in jinn.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the same concept as a doppelganger, just with a little bit more.
Well, that's the whole, the hag.
Of a spin. Yeah, exactly.
The hag oftentimes will assume the form of someone you love. You know, and can transform or become the vision. And you know, it comes from the fear of being replaced.
Yeah.
You know, that deep sensation that you are replaceable, that your position in the world is not secure, that somebody could come along and just take everything from you. There is a great, like Twilight Zone tried to reboot in the 80s, and there's a great episode with Bruce Willis, where he was, and it was kind of like a Christmas Carol. Oh. He was just a mean, business-oriented, never had time for anybody, you know, a cold person. And he started, like, getting thank yous from people, thank you messages. All of a sudden, his mother is like, oh, I'm so glad you visited and things. And he has no idea what's going on. And it turns out that there is somebody, looks just like him, going around doing these things. And he is slowly getting sicker and sicker.
Uh-huh.
Oh, wow.
And he's like in bed, you know, fading away, literally. And the doppelganger shows up and he looks at the doppelganger. He's like, you know, take care of, you know, everyone. And he's like, you know, I will.
Oh,
and then he
boy,
just
yeah.
disappeared.
Oh, that's good.
And I was like,
that's very,
it's,
very
it's so, like the concept of be good.
Yeah.
Or somebody's going to do it better.
Wow.
Show up and live your life better.
So let's say doppelgangers exist. Mm-hmm. What is y'all's theory as to where they would come from? Like, are they something that is demonic? Are they malicious spirits trying to, you know, or like a demon or something like that?
I think they're more resentful because, like, you know, every bit of lore that you kind of see with doppelgangers, even with us, it's like they're resentful because they're living like a trash existence.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then they're seeing you live a normal existence in reality. And they're like, I want that so bad.
Yeah.
You know, it's like almost always these stories of how much would you do to get the life you wanted, you know? And so where they come from is tricky. Because I can't wrap my mind around whether or not they're like a spawn off of like your energy or your spirit, you know, or if they like saying like when you're born, like this moment you enter the world, they're spawned from into existence or whatever, or if, you know, it's more so a concept of like they slowly start to become a thing as you continue living on your life. I really can't figure out.
Yeah, there are lots of different theories. Going back to that stupid book, in the very beginning of the book, the preface of the book suggests that all mirrors are like windows. And on the other side of the window is just this vast ocean of darkness, this incredible gulf of unformed things. It's just a chaotic nightmare of all the things that we ever wish didn't exist but do, and they're behind and held at bay through mirrors. You know, mirrors didn't exist in the forms that we're used to for so long that these things, these primordial, dark, spiritual things, just existed in a dimension of darkness. And then these windows show up, and they can look in and see us going about our lives, and they can see us, so they start to imitate us. And the concept that seemed to suggest was that these spirits, these malevolent spirits, can kind of hook into a single mirror, and they will fight to remain at that one mirror, and they will look through the mirror, and they will choose the person that they're going to try to emulate, and they're going to try to form into the reflection, and they're going to try to, and it was a fascinating story of what's behind the mirror. And of course, it was enough to like give me heebie-jeebies for the rest of my life. You know, mirrors are very contentious to me. And I would see traces of these stories repeated over and over. People will talk about these things, and you'll hear stories that kind of hearken to that one notion that a mirror is a threshold between which a never-ending gulf of darkness and the world of light that we live in exists. So it's fascinating to think that maybe these spirits are just these desperate, starving things that wish they were real, that wish they had existence, which is also a common storyline.
Yeah.
You know, of fey lore, of, you know, folklore and fairy tales, and that beings just want to be a part of our world. Desperate to be, and quickly enamored by humans. They see a human and they're like, these are wondrous things. Mm-hmm. How wondrous the humans are, and how much I wish I were like that. And so they start imitating us and they start looking like us. Even in like the really scary versions of haunted forest lore, a lot of times people will hear voices, sometimes their own voices, calling out to them, calling their name. So now you're dealing with mimicry. Mm-hmm. This idea of mimicry being a way to draw people, you know, crying like a baby out in the woods, hearing a baby's cry and following it because we are compelled by that. Intriguingly enough, people believe that that's why cats meow. Cats are imitating the baby cry to get the attention because cats do not meow naturally. They adapted to make that sound, a sound that we would respond to.
Pretty sure the internet would hate that.
Oh, no, I'm sure.
That's actually a pretty well-known concept.
I would not put that on like a scientific stake or anything, but I heard that enough that meowing is in fact a sound that is supposed to trigger our nurturing.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
You know, and that makes sense that if an animal witnesses, well, they really care for that thing when it makes that noise. Mm-hmm. Maybe I should make that noise. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe that noise.
That sounds actually like, you know, science. That actually sounds like evolution. Like the spider tail viper. Y'all know about that?
Yes.
All right. Yeah. Yes. Right?
Absolutely.
Bro, is that not a spider?
It's insane.
Yes.
I tagged you in it.
Yeah, where it's like, come get me.
And then the bird's like
zoom, and then shump.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
For those of you listening, we just described the actions of the spider tail viper, where the spider tail viper essentially has a tail that looks like a spider, puts it on a rock, and it's like, come get me, Mr. Bird. And then the bird, being dumb, you know, is like, spider, which what birds eat specifically?
Plenty.
What? Oh, they tons. Can see well, spiders? Just,
oh, yeah. What do you mean? What? What?
Well, like, I mean, you're
hawks, owls.
Yeah, we talk about birds' vision a lot.
True,
because they're very good. Well, I mean, think about moths that have created the camouflage to look like things
that's
on
so
their
cool.
back.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So like something, it's a face on their back. That's a lot of
wild
intuition.
You know, yeah. Right.
You know, it's like so a bug was like, we keep getting eaten. Why do you think that is? Because we don't look scary. Can we look scary? Maybe the next generation.
Apple-somatic.
Maybe our kids. It's like, okay. Hey, kids, look scary.
Okay.
And then it just happened over, you know, however many years of, you know, centuries of evolution. Yeah, it's fascinating to think about. But back to the doppelganger point, the idea of spirits trying to mimic us in order to be brought in from the cold. In order to experience the life that we exist in, because I think in a lot of ways, I don't know that ghosts hang out with each other.
Yeah.
You know, as rare as it is for us to see a ghost, it might be as rare for ghosts to see each other.
Mm.
You know, they don't always know of each other. They don't always, you know, sometimes they do. And usually it's because they're connected. Like if a group of children died, they tend to know each other. Mm. But if you have one ghost and then there's another ghost, you don't get a lot of details. They don't really tell you a lot back and forth. And I think it's because maybe every being's on its own frequency, dependent on when it died or how it's existing in a place. And I'm certainly not saying that it's impossible that they see each other. I'm just saying that it might be a very solitary and scary place for spirits. They may think they're the only thing, you know, or they're living in a type of desperation that they see us and they're like, look at this community. Look at these people care for each other. Look at this life. Because we talk about that a lot. You know, like ghosts really, really want to be alive again. Or feel alive again. But if you were never alive, that probably would drive you insane.
Right.
The notion, because you don't know what it is, but it must seem
I always
amazing.
Gravitate. You guys know this. Everyone knows this. Everyone listening knows this. I always gravitate to the demonic.
Sure.
Yes.
I always, but this, y'all, seems extra demonic because yes. because of the concept of possession, right? It's using, it's like a form. There's also, if we're talking about mimicry, you know, in nature, which for some reason I have researched a lot about recently, actually. I think maybe because the doppelganger stuff is gone.
I think so, it's just you have an interest in wild things that animals do.
Yeah.
You
know,
that's true too.
But I think a lot of people know about that parasite that goes into snails.
And
it goes into their antennas, right? And then it's like, hey, I'm a delicious meal, and it's like super bright and very easy for the bird to see. The bird comes down, eats it, and then the cycle continues because it comes out in the bird poop, and there's more of that parasite. And so that is very demonic. To me, like that's very like I'm gonna possess something for my own gain and spread like a cancer. And so I sometimes really think, like, when I think about doppelgangers, I think that 9 times out of 10, for me at least, that it is a demonic entity that is trying to harvest and replicate. And, you know,
see, the thing is I mean, you're very correct in logically thinking that that is a darker entity, mm-hmm. because, you know, the whole concept of like why people lock their mirrors and things like that really is because they're trying to keep evil entities out, you know, not allowing things in through the threshold.
Sure.
So if doppelgangers are the ones who have the grasp of the mirrors and things like that, you know, that would lean on the side mm-hmm. of being an evil entity. And then on the flip side of it with the mimicry and whatnot, every entity that you encounter in the woods, if it, you know, says your name, knows your name in general, talks to you, calls out to you, whistles, you know, things like that, you just automatically know from, you know, centuries of ancestors and things like that telling you, like, don't mess with these entities.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
that leans on the side of.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know, I would say, what do I always say about nature, Madison? I always say that one of my favorite quotes, and it's just because it sounds evil, it's not, there's no reason for it really, but nature is Satan's church. And I've always thought that that is such an interesting thing to say, because nature to me, and you know this, is how I know that God exists, like, you know, because it's just so specific and interesting. And that's what helps me keep the faith and whatnot. And so, you know, I've always thought that nature is Satan's church is a very interesting example. And I think that if that's true, I think that aggressive mimicry, which I believe is what it's called in nature when there's that mimicry to harvest and kill something, I think that aggressive mimicry could be something related to demonic.
Well, I mean, the problem is these are our definitions, the definitions we place on it. You know, when we see nature, because nature is brutal. And nature is it doesn't care about the rules or laws or anything like that. You know, if a puma gets into your house and rips you to shreds, it's doing what pumas do. It is not being evil.
Nope.
But we can define it and say that was an evil animal. That was an evil animal. It's like, was it evil or was it just doing what the animal
does? That's exactly it. Right.
And that becomes the fascinating point, is sins exist because humans label them. Demons exist because humans label them. These things exist, or not exist, these things are defined by us. And so it is easy to start to say, well, that which harms us is evil.
Right.
But again, it might be its nature. You know, I used to say that there's a lot of demon activity that seems an awful lot like fire. When man first discovered fire, you know, they worshipped it, and they thought it was alive. And why wouldn't they? It moves. You feed it. and it grows, it's just like a living thing. Why wouldn't you think that it's alive?
Yeah.
You know, in your primitive mind, you're like, I've found this new animal, this new thing, but when I touch it, it burns me. If it gets on me, it'll kill me. So we have to be very careful and cautious around it, which is what I always say, do with a demonic force.
Oh.
Because if you touch it, it will burn you. If it gets on you, it will kill you. You have to be mindful, respectful, keep your distance. And there's enough conversation on the table to suggest that if you know how to work with it, you can cook yourself a fine meal. It can warm you. Because that's what a lot of cults do, are like, I'm worshiping to this entity, and it is giving me, you know, powers and things like that, because they are learning how to warm themselves by this fire.
Wow.
So it's weird that we have all this language, but the truth of the matter is it's probably best to stay away because we don't understand it entirely. We don't know it entirely.
If we have any listeners that were on like the edge of like, hey, should I join this cult? They're going to be, now after hearing that, they're going to be like, I'm doing it.
Like, well, it's just a matter of being respectful of nature. We know to go out in the woods, avoid the bears. You know, do not poke the bear. You know, don't pick up the cub and run around with it. We know all of these things, and of course, a lot of that's from observation. A lot of that was, that guy got totally eaten.
But what if it needs snuggles?
Don't snuggle the bear.
No.
It is not our place to snuggle a bear.
But it is an interesting point to bring up because Chris and I always, you know, discuss demonic entities, malevolent entities in that catch-all term, simply because that is the only term really that exists for those types of things.
Absolutely.
But truly what it means and what you did a good job describing is that these are entities that threaten us as
capable of harm.
Right. And that's truly why people don't mess with them, because there are plenty of, you know, people who practice witchcraft and things like that, who work with demons and things like that, and they have studied specifically the boundaries of what they can do. Right.
How close can you get?
How close can you get? And
what
also,
can you safely take away from it?
Right. Well, and the whole other part of it is the reason why people don't tend to get into, you know, any kind of type of contact or relationships with these types of entities is because they usually want something, or no, I should say always want something in return. And sometimes that's really brutal.
I'm going to bring up a classic movie, Tremors 2.
Yes.
Tremors 2 has a line in it that always sticks out in my head when people talk about demons. Because people talk about demons and manipulation and what they want and what they do, but there's a line in the movie, Tremors 2, which states,
they can fly!
No. Oh. You mean to tell me that they're so smart because they're so dumb?
Oh, yeah.
The creatures seem like they were super smart, like they were always outsmarting them and always doing these things, but they were just acting on a very singular motive, which was food and I can see you, you know, because I can see your heat. And that was it. The reason why we are the ones who put all of the intelligence on a lot of these things.
Right.
We are the ones who give them motivation. But they could just be this rolling force that wants to eat us. And the only thing they want is to eat us. But we're like, oh no, it's malicious and it's got these intents and it's thinking of this and it has ancient knowledge. It just wants to eat you.
Wow.
And that's bad enough.
That's,
you know,
honestly, like pretty good screenwriting, surprisingly.
Yeah.
Like, I'm impressed. Absolutely. Every time somebody goes into a lot of you know, because even in the cases of possession where a person is speaking languages that they don't know or things like that, it's like, are you dealing with an entity that knows that, or is that entity opening up the fact that we are interconnected, all human beings?
Hmm.
We are all one piece of a giant puzzle, and the universal consciousness concept.
Mm-hmm.
And when this thing is inside of us, our ability to reach out through time and through space to other ideologies and other knowledges, that might be the case. We might just be drawing upon it. It's like, they're speaking German and they've never studied German.
Yeah.
Well, you know who studied German? Germans. So you might be, you know, channeling through to other people, you know, because you hear it every now and then that people will like go into a coma and wake up being able to speak a foreign language, or people go into a coma and suddenly have a skill that they didn't have before.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's because there's a repository of all thought that could conceivably connect us all. And we, obsessed with individuality, refuse to commune with each other because we're so bound to be the individual.
Sure.
Which is also bringing back the fear of the doppelganger, that we're not individual, that we're not singular. It's possible doppelgangers are there specifically to tell us that we're a part of a whole, and we refuse it. We refute it. We say no. We are not, no one's like us. No one, you know, I'm fiercely independent and fiercely individual, but the doppelganger stands there and says, no, you're a part of something greater and bigger, and we are all the same.
Yeah.
And it is our fierce determination to say, no!
So, this is a really fun subject. And it I think really that I think we're going to do another episode on this, but we're going to do a Q&A with only with pair junkies. I'm going to put on Patreon soon, like, hey, submit your doppelganger questions, and we're going to answer pair junkie questions. I think that'd be pretty fun to do, like, a pair junkie Q&A with doppelgangers. For sure.
And a good point to end off on that logic that Chris just gave us is, you see this in nature as well, that interconnectivity. Look at mushrooms. Have y'all seen how insane mushrooms are?
Amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Because they are one of the oldest species of anything in the world. And they grow everywhere, and they all are interconnected more so than the internet, is what scientists say.
Absolutely.
Because they have this mycelium connection. So they're able to tell what all the other mushrooms around them are experiencing. So if there is, you know, a nutrient depletion in an area, they stop growing in that area because the other mushrooms are like, hey, don't grow in this area, you know, things like that. And they're able to communicate all across the world. So why wouldn't that be the same concept for the rest of humanity?
Are you trying to say that there's no individualism with them? Because I agree with you. And maybe that's why it works. There's no me over you. There's no narcissism. There's insane equality. I think that you're talking about
even
is
like flocks of birds. When bees, you watch a flock of birds fly, hundreds of birds flying will immediately change course, and they don't collide into each other. They move at such an amazing pace and such an amazing, beautiful display of cohesion that it seems as though they are sharing this one thought, this one existence and experience. And it's like maybe they just have such good reflexes, but it doesn't seem like it. It doesn't seem like one bird's initiating and the rest of them are following. They'll move in a swarming pattern without hitting each other, which is, you know, kind of beautiful to look at.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
Yeah. So if you're ever questioning the paranormal, just look at nature, because nature truly parallels a lot of paranormal concepts. Mm-hmm. You know, even talking back to the mimicry things that we were discussing, you know, the fact that birds are intelligent enough, like, you know, birds are intelligent enough to learn to talk. You see like parrots and things like that, that are able to learn words and say them in ways that I'm like, I can fully understand you. It's kind of that same concept with entities, where they're able to watch and learn from us. Yeah.
And then mimic us to communicate or to attach. And don't forget that, like, cuckoo birds knock the eggs out and leave their eggs there. You know, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of that in nature, where some, you know, parasitic or other, you know, other will show up and be like, here, take care of this. We'll put this in your life. You know, the fears of foundlings in folklore kind of come from that idea that desperation to be part of us, they will sink in and say, here's a little kid. It's not a monster. Raise it.
What other examples of paranormal in nature are there?
Gosh, so many.
Well, I mean, even look at like the relationship between dogs and humans, where dogs are descendants of wolves, something wild and uncontrolled and whatnot. And they were able to bring dogs to the point where dogs are able to, like, I look at Argyle sometimes, our dog, our Silky Terrier. Uh-huh. She is so intelligent to the point where has learned to make certain noises, and I know what she's saying and what she's wanting.
Absolutely.
Do that.
And so it's the same kind of concept of like, she's a descendant of a wolf, but she's so intelligent now that she has learned to interact with humans.
And it's annoying.
Oh, it's very annoying.
So annoying.
It's very annoying. But so are ghosts sometimes.
Ghosts are very annoying.
And so it's that same concept of like some ghosts, like baby ghosts, not like children ghosts, but like, you know, new ghosts and things like that. Sometimes they try things out to see what works. You know, they might not end up being an entity that relies on knocking things off counters and opening doors and whatnot, but they could be a new entity in the scheme of things. And they're like, how am I going to get this person's attention? Wait, I think I can try doing this and maybe that'll get their attention. And then they watch for the reaction. It's the same way with a lot of animals. Mm-hmm. They test their boundaries and then they're like, did it work? How'd they react? What's happening?
Well, you know? And almost every scavenger has paranormal mirror, because when you think of those birds that sit on like big animals,
just
waiting to eat what the big animal gets, you know, feeder fish.
With the sharks. Yeah.
You know, when you think about those entities, those creatures, they're very similar to a paranormal experience, because what's happening in a paranormal experience is oftentimes they're gathering around the wealth of nourishment from our lives, and they're feeding off of the pieces that come off. And they can become pretty bold. You know, a hyena is a scavenger animal, not really a hunter. But when given the opportunity, it'll take something down.
Right.
You know, they're scary animals. But for the most part, they're just waiting for the leftovers. They're just waiting for what the lion didn't eat. But that makes them no less fierce and no less dangerous. It just means that they've adapted to live off of the life of another, which is very much how a lot of paranormal encounters happen. Mm-hmm. They see that we have plenty, and that plenty is life force, is life energy, is the things that nourish us spiritually, and they gather around and they're hoping to get pieces of it. And if they get enough pieces, they'll start to beg at the table. Mm-hmm. And if they get enough, they can become aggressive. Absolutely.
Well, and that's the same idea of like why you can set boundaries with entities. Usually.
No, sit. Yeah, stay.
Right. it's like, it's the same idea as like a dog. You have to tell them your boundaries, or they're not going to know. They're like, I didn't realize that bothered you, me opening this door or whatever. But once you tell them, a lot of times they're like, okay, won't open the door anymore. Negative reaction. Maybe I shouldn't be opening doors. Let me try something else. So imagine your house ghost as a puppy, basically. You got to teach them its boundaries. But on that note, thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. And maybe we'll do a whole episode on ghost parallels with nature, if you're interested in listening to something like that. But hopefully we answered most of your questions about ghosts, or not ghosts, doppelgangers at least. And if you have any more questions, maybe send it over to our Q&A button. We are going to start doing Q&As again. So if you have questions, send them on over to the Q&A button on TikTok. Again, if you liked this video, make sure to like and subscribe on YouTube, or give us a rating over on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And if you don't already follow us, you can follow us on all the platforms under Haunted City Podcasts. But with that, my name is Madison Timmons.
I'm Chris Susie.
And stay spooky, y'all.